This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
On the latest episode of Real Help with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by trichologist Claire Fulham, chatting all things hair loss.
I remember then going, I'm losing a bit more hair. Like, I could see hair everywhere. It was all over my desk and work everywhere. And so I went to my GP. She found five big patches on my scalp, one the size of my fist. So I was like, right, what am I going to do about this? Give me a plan. She just looked me dead in the eye and said, there's nothing you can do. I went on a list for dermatologists. She had a cancellation and she very quickly said, yes, you have alopecia areata.
As ever, available on all podcast platforms.
On Friday, International Women's Day, the country will go to the polls in two referendums. One is being described as the family vote and the second as the care vote. In really simple terms, the first question deals with how the Constitution views the family. At present, Article 41 says the family is based on marriage. The proposal is to broaden this definition to include other durable relationships.
And I go back to it. It is about the recognition of the reality of family life in Ireland and of the diversity of families in Ireland.
If they wanted to put in a line about lone parents, I'd be very happy to vote for that. But durable relationships doesn't do that.
The second question relates to a section of Bunrock na hÉireann that talks about the life of women and their duties of mothers within the home. It proposes changing the wording so the Constitution instead recognises the care given by family members to each other and how that is important in Irish society.
These are small steps, but they're really important. Do we want to say to girls that your life is defined in the home and boys, you've no role at all?
I think we're being asked to vote for something that will then just brush it all away and the government can say, oh, we're all so progressive now. And if it's passed on Saturday, this will change nothing.
I'm Kevin Doyle, and today on the Indo Daily, we're going to hear from both sides of the debate. I'm joined in studio by Irish Independent columnist Sarah Carey, who is voting no-no, and by Orla O'Connor, director of the National Women's Council, who believes this is an opportunity for positive change. Now, we're going to keep it civil, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Orla, we might start with you. We're going to separate the two issues out, because I think that is... People do seem to be a little bit confused about which bit falls where.
Sure.
So let's start by talking about the family issue. You're voting yes. Why?
Yeah, we think this is really important. So right now, the definition of the family is based on marriage in the Constitution. And so there's an opportunity now to extend this, to reflect the reality of our families today. And we know that 40% of children are born into unmarried families. So this is an opportunity to recognise those families. It's about recognising unmarried families, cohabiting couples and the children in those. And this really is about our Constitution catching up. And in fact, both referendums in some cases are. But in terms of the family, there's a really important recognition piece in here. And that's why we think it is really important that people go out and vote on this one and vote yes. I think because of the legacy and how we've treated unmarried families in Ireland. And there is a terrible legacy. And I think this is an opportunity, again, for people in Ireland, as we've done in previous referendums, to have the Constitution reflect who we are and to move away from that quite shameful past in terms of the treatment of unmarried families.
Is there anything tangible by way of disadvantage that you can tell me that those families that you're talking about, those unmarried families, what disadvantage do they have from what's there right now? It doesn't actually block them in anything, does it?
No, well, I mean, we know from the John O'Mara case where the judge clearly said the change in, you know, is important in the Constitution because...
Just explain the John O'Mara case for people who don't know.
So this was the case where John O'Mara's partner died and then he tried to get a widow's pension and he was refused and then he took a case in order to get it. And he won that case, but he won it on the basis of children being in the family. He won it on the grounds of equality, actually. So that's, I suppose, a tangible piece in terms of what would make a difference. But I'm really conscious from talking to families, this is so strongly felt in terms of a recognition bit. And it's not okay to say to families, unmarried families, no, you are not a proper family according to our constitution.
I think, Sarah, you've been writing about this, and your primary concern is not necessarily the idea of widening the idea of a family, but it's what it's being widened to, because the proposed language talks about other durable relationships and we don't fully know what that means.
Yeah, so two things. First of all, I mean, Orla's absolutely right when she talks about the historic stigmatisation and discrimination against unmarried mothers and about lone parents. But this is nothing to do with lone parents, because by definition, lone parents are not in a cohabiting durable relationship with somebody else. And I think it's wrong to invoke the suffering off one group to try and get something else through. So I want to just clarify what it's not about, and I don't think it's about lone parents. With regard to durable relationships, I think what the lawyers, the moderate lawyers, you know, have been stressing, that this is about marriage-like relationships, people who are cohabiting and are living together as a family. Now, what is a marriage? It is two people saying that they wish to confer the rights and obligations of a relationship on each other, and to be specifically recognised by the state. They go through a process for that. Consent is established. There are witnesses. You don't have to go to a castle and spend 20 grand down the country on it. You can do it, you know, in an office, and it can all be very low key. And what I want to know is, if there are people who are cohabiting in these relationships, how is consent established that they want to confer these rights on each other, such as the widow's pension, inheritance rights, these kind of things? It's nothing to do with the rights of children, because the rights of children were equally established in the 2012 children's referendum. That's done. You know, married and unmarried parents have actually got equal rights in terms of access to children and all of that. That's over. And how is consent withheld? So how do I reject? There are lots of brilliant independent women who say, I don't want to get married. I don't want to be part of a relationship where my rights and, say, my decision as to how I'm going to dispose of my own property and assets.
But they can still say
that. But here's the thing. If it can be decided post-mortem, if somebody can claim after the fact, when no consent has been established, that they were in a durable relationship and therefore they are entitled to, say, for example, inheritance rights, I think that's really, really dangerous. There has to be some process by where you establish consent. Now, we had civil partnership for about 5 years before the same-sex referendum. And why not bring that back? That, and you don't need a referendum for that. And that would be a process by which the two people are saying, this is what we want for each other. If you do not have the consent process, I don't know how consent is established.
Let me just bring Orla back in on that. Because Orla, this idea of the durable relationship, it has become the big talking point of the family referendum. It hasn't been defined. So if we think back to the abortion referendum, for example, people were pretty clear on what the legislation was that would follow if they voted yes. In this instance, it's kind of been said the courts will ultimately have to decide. People will take cases over inheritance or whatever it might be down the road, and judges will decide exactly what a durable relationship is. So that the argument there, I think Sarah is making, is it's a bit of a punt in the dark.
Well, it's actually the opposite in a way from what you've just said, Kevin, because there is legislation on succession rights, on inheritance, on guardianship, on custody. All the that legislation is there. And this is about our constitution catching up. And I do think it's important that people know that lone parents are included in this, because a durable relationship is also about the relationship between the parent and the child. So they're absolutely included. But this is very much about a catch-up piece. Of course, our constitution isn't going to put in that detail, because that's for legislation. But in most of the areas that are being spoken about, the legislation is there. And yes, there is, of course, in every aspect within our constitution, people's rights to go, you know, to go and to take, to test the constitution in the court. But this is fundamentally a recognition bit, because what we have right now is a very limited definition of the family within our constitution. Marriage is still protected, will continue to be protected. But it's about saying that all these other important relationships are included, and we need to value the diversity of our families. It's not okay. I mean, I don't usually talk personally, but I'm a lone parent. I don't want my son learning in school that the Constitution doesn't recognise the family that he's in. And that's what this is about.
The interesting thing, Kevin, is how differently people are reacting to similar experiences. So, for instance, Barbara Scully and Larissa Nolan, two women columnists, were both single mothers, and they're voting no because they don't think that invoking their situations, you know, is fair and making any sense of the whole thing. A durable relationship is about a cohabiting couple, and what rights does that bring, and what is the legal process for that? And let's remember that the history of our constitution is the history of the state going into the Supreme Court and arguing till it's blue in the face that certain rights don't exist, and that they intended that the words in the constitution meant something which it didn't. For example, the government opposed the O'Mara case. Like, they didn't want him to have his rights. So it's really dodgy, I think, when you've got ministers coming out saying what they think something does and doesn't mean. Why are they concealing the Attorney General's advice? Why are they not letting us see the interdepartmental reports?
The Cabinet never publishes the Attorney General's advice.
But what about the interdepartmental discussions about the meaning of all of this? Why didn't they put a heads of bill? When it came to abortion and same-sex marriage, both of which I voted yes for enthusiastically, we got to see what all of this means. And now they're trying to say, no, don't worry, it's just inclusive, it's just nice, it's just symbolic, when they've literally just lost a Supreme Court case about pension rights.
Do you think that the definition of marriage should be extended beyond what is there at the moment?
What I want is for people who want their cohabiting relationship to be recognised by the state to be in a position where they actually provide witness consent for that. So if you want the state involved in your relationship, you ask for the state to be involved in your relationship, because otherwise it's just been imposed upon you without you actually filling out a form.
But I actually think, we need to go back to what are people being faced with. They're being faced with making a decision about, do you want to keep the constitution, the definition of family in the constitution, based on marriage, or do you want to broaden it to reflect the reality of families today? That's the choice being put to people. And that's why, in our view, it is so important to vote yes, because it is, and I go back to it, it is about the recognition of the reality of family life in Ireland and of the diversity of families in Ireland.
And on that, if they wanted to put in a line about lone parents, I'd be very happy to vote for that. Like, I'm not against not recognising lone parents, but durable relationships doesn't do that.
Okay, we'll move on to the second referendum, which is around care. And I suppose traditionally, Sarah, this has been referenced, and I know some people are saying, stop calling it that,
but
people recognise it as the place of women in the home. Yeah. And that's what we've called it for decades.
Yeah.
And technically, that is not what the Constitution says. But that is what is in front of us, this idea, this value, this 1937 value, that women had a special place in the home, and by doing so, be that raising children or looking after the men with their dinner, that they served society.
Yeah, and again, it's similar.
Surely you want to get rid of that.
Well, here's the really interesting thing, and it's what I just said a minute ago about people having similar experiences. Women and mothers that I know are absolutely livid about the fact that they carry the burden of care and they're doing most of the housework, and that motherhood has such a massive impact on their health, their mental health, their quality of life, you know, their whole life, you know. Like, this is defines them in a very, very profound way. Not as profound as class, but in a very, very profound way. And some women are reacting to that and saying, therefore, the solution is that we vote yes to get rid of this bloody thing out of the Constitution. But many more women I know, and the position that I ended up landing at after genuinely a lot of internal wrangling and agitation was, no, I don't want to vote for this kind of amendment because I don't want my experience erased from the Constitution. But motherhood is this huge thing. And I think back on pregnancy, you know, the trauma of giving birth, feeding children. I was made redundant on maternity leave, which I was actually kind of relieved about because I wanted to be at home with my children. And I don't want motherhood erased from the Constitution. So in Germany, they have a nice line in their Constitution where it says every mother shall be entitled to the protection and care of the community. So I would happily, again, have extended, like, delete the bit about duties in the home, would have been happy with that, but leave something about mothers in there, because you cannot degender our experience. And people really feel angry. And so many mothers have said to me, they feel absolutely furious that their experience has been erased. So if it had been a different wording, I'd have happily gone.
I'll let Orla back in 1 second, but I do want to put it back to you, Sarah.
Yeah.
There isn't a third way. This is not Nice. This
is not
Lisbon.
Yeah, but I'm not following.
We are not going to go back and have a political. Let's be honest. This is going off the political agenda for at least a decade if it's not passed on Friday.
Which is exactly why it shouldn't be passed. because it's then just brushing it all away and saying, oh, but we've done that. It's all sorted now. Off you go. And that's especially important in relation to the other side of this. So I've talked about, you know, what we're deleting and what we're adding in is this care side. Now, I haven't been an activist in the kind of the care issues. It's people like Tom Clonan and that we all know who've advocated so hard, you know, for their family members. And they're furious about what's been put in is a whitewash.
Yeah, now, there are plenty of carers who are in favour as well.
Yeah, but again, it shows you how divisive it is that people really feel that there's been a flawed wording and that the government watered down the proposals of the Citizens' Assembly. And if you let this through, then that's it, it's gone.
Yeah, Orla, symbolically, this has been held on International Women's Day. That's not an accident. The government will admit to that. But it's also 2 days before Mother's Day. Could it be possible that by Sunday we have removed mothers from our constitution, as Sarah suggests?
No, so let's be really clear. 41.2 was always about limiting women's lives and limiting mothers. It was put in 1937 in the context of, and like it is really important, I think, that people know this, that so from between 1922 and 1937, there was a raft of pieces of legislation to push women out of public life and back into the home. And that's what that article did. It came on the foot of the Marriage Bar, the Juries Act, Employment Act, which meant there were far less women in certain sectors of employment. It never protected women. It never protected mothers. It was always about limiting their lives. And in fact, what it did, and I mean, this is, I think, the really important bit. What it did was it absolved the state. The state therefore said, well, that's your job now to do the caring, to do the housework, and no one else has responsibility. Men don't have responsibility. The state doesn't have responsibility. And it's why for so long, for years, we have fought so hard for things like supports for childcare. The underpinning of 41.2 is why we're still in this place in Ireland in comparison to our other European countries where childcare in Ireland is so expensive, because the state never really got involved in care and only has got involved in care in just recent, recent years.
Well, I pick up on two points you make there. One, I'll come back on well, let's do the care question first, because the wording that we're changing to makes it more around carers. It's degendering it, if you like, and it's talking about the care that's provided by family. But that's exactly what you've just said. It's just going to move it away from women and just put us all in the same box.
So what the new wording is doing...
It's not going to do anything else for carers.
So what the new wording is doing is, I suppose it's similar when we were talking about family, it's putting in a value of care into our constitution. So instead of this limiting piece, you're now putting in a piece that's saying care is important in our society. Care matters to us. And it's saying then that the state has to support that, strive to support it, is the wording that goes in. And we think that's important. Yes, because it's a recognition that it's for all of us.
It's a bit wishy-washy though, isn't it? Strive to support.
I think we've been really, really clear in that we see this as a first step. It's a first step about putting care into the constitution. I think the words of Mary McAleese were really powerful last weekend when she said, this is a journey. We're not at the destination, but it's on the way in terms of let me finish, to greater inclusivity and greater equality. And I think what I'm certainly hearing, and I've been out canvassing now for the last 4 weeks, people really see, in terms of voting yes for care, has to be a call on government to provide much better services for care, things like childcare, elder care and independent living for disabled people. They see that, yes, as a call on government to do a lot more. This isn't enough, but it's a small step.
I just want to pick up on one more thing, and Sarah, I'll let you back in then, but you talk about how this has held women back, the 1937 vision of this. But it hasn't so much in recent decades. I'm not going to say for a second that we're anywhere near equal or equality, and we still, but women have in lots of sectors broken through glass ceilings.
Absolutely.
There are lots of men, and I know Sarah's going to disagree with this point in a minute. There are lots of men who are the primary caregiver in families and all the rest of it. Society just moved on by itself and left the constitution behind, did it not?
I wouldn't agree. Well, what I would say is society didn't move on by itself. Every single piece was hard fought for by campaigners who went out, and a slow, slow incremental change. And as you said, we're still not there. So nothing came automatic. But the problem was that this article underpinned legislation that we saw in our social welfare system that talks about male breadwinner model, legislation that really caused problems for women in terms of breaking out, as you say, in terms of the glass ceiling. And we're still at a point where women are at such a low level in politics, 23%. This article underpinned that because it removed women from public life. And that's the choice that people have. You can choose to get rid of this piece and say, OK, well, let's name a piece on care and value it. But ultimately, it is critical, I think, for women that does come out of our constitution. Because again, and similar to the family, is this really what we want our children to be learning about in school? Do we want to say to girls that your life is defined in the home and boys, you've no role at all?
Now, Sarah, I'm going to stay steadfastly neutral in this, yeah. But I did read your column on Saturday in the Irish Independent and it annoyed me.
Okay.
On the basis that one of the anecdotes you told in it was around your young fella refusing to clean up the kitchen.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if I'd call my ass. Go for it. I'm a modern man.
Yeah.
You know.
Are you hoovering, Kevin? Are you doing the hoovering?
I think I do my fair share of, and my wife is not here to disagree, so I think I do my fair share of duties in the home, let's call it that. I think your argument there, where the young fellow wouldn't clean up the kitchen, it's a good anecdote, but it's not real. It has moved on from that.
Well, this is real. 90% of those who recorded their principal economic status as looking after the home or family in Census 2022 are women. And Orla actually quoted that in her own article in the Irish Times. A 2021 CSO survey found that nearly 2/3 of women say they are mainly responsible for housework, compared to just 9% of men. And every survey that's done, and the most recent one was done by Amorek for the Iona Institute, said that 2/3 of women actually want to be able to spend more time. They go out to, this is actually the laugh about the Article 41, is that it said women shouldn't be forced out of the home due to economic necessity, when you will meet so many women who are brokenhearted going back to work and having to hand their babies over. And they have to do it because they have to pay the mortgage. And the other interesting thing about the 1937 clause was, it was part of this papal encyclical theology, which was to do with the campaign for a just wage. Now, just wage for men, I'll grant you, okay? I'm not defending it, right? But the point was that one income should be enough to support a household. And we have built an economic model, which, fine, I am a working mother, I've got my own bloody money, and that was in my article as well. There's no joint account in our house, you know. I'm a card-carrying feminist, and I'm not simpering about, oh, feminists are mean and exploiting women or any of that nonsense, right? But women work because they have to. And can you imagine a world where one income was enough and women didn't
have to?
Yeah, but so, but that's a, but that's why women are so angry about this, because they feel that they're being told, oh, but going out to work is exactly what you should want. You're not supposed to want to stay at home and mind your babies, even though in those early years, it actually is what an awful lot of women want. And again, there's someone like Ellen Coyne, you know, the Irish Independent journalist, has found herself in a position of, she would like to be in a position where she could give up work or do less work just for a few years, spend those critical early years with their children, and they can't do it. So again, like the other wording, I think we're being asked to vote for something that will then just brush it all away, and the government can say, oh, we're all so progressive now, and if it's passed on Saturday, women will get up on Sunday morning and their lives will go on as normal. It will change nothing. And that's the huge difference in this referendum from the previous referendum, where only a change in the constitution could actually grant people real and meaningful change and satisfaction of rights like abortion, like same-sex marriage. This will change nothing.
Okay, I'm going to wrap it up, and I'm going to give you both a last pitch at it. And as part of that, I want you to call it for me as well, how you see it playing out when the votes are counted on Saturday. Orla, I'll let you go first. Sarah says, nothing will change if you vote no, and nothing will change if you vote yes.
Voting yes for on both the family and on Article 41.2 and on care will change our constitution to reflect the society we are, but we'll also say something about the people that we are in terms of what we value in our society, that we value equality, we value families, we value inclusivity, and we value women and equality. This is a step in that direction. It's a really important one. It'll be really important for the children in families to be recognised, and we'll also really send a strong signal in terms of where Ireland is in terms of reaching equality. And as I've said, these are small steps, but they're really important in keeping us on that trajectory for equality in Ireland.
And Sarah, you haven't called it Orla, but I'll come back to you. Okay. Have a think for a second about how you're going to call it.
Well, I can call it. I mean, I believe people will come out and vote yes, because I firmly believe, and I can see this from speaking with people, people absolutely want... They want the Constitution to reflect their lives to a greater degree, and they feel on both of these it doesn't.
Sarah, Orla's argument to some extent is, yes, it's symbolic, but it's a step towards something better. And surely the symbolism of the 1930s we need to move on from.
OK, well, the first thing is in durable relationships, I don't think it will end up being symbolic. I think there will be a court case that we'd all come to regret. So I'm voting no on those grounds. And on a mother's, I am not erasing myself from the Constitution. I went through too much. And I gave up too much to delete myself from the Constitution. I don't want to do that. On the result, I honestly have no idea. There's that huge don't know chunk out there. Will they vote? Will they stay at home? I'd love to give you an answer, Kevin. I can't.
A columnist who won't nail her colours to the mast. Well, that's a new one on me. My thanks to Sarah Carey and Orla O'Connor for what I think was quite an informative debate and very measured. Fair play. I'm Kevin Doyle, and today's Indo Daily was produced by Garrett Mulhall, researched by Tabitha Monaghan and JJ Clark, with sound designed by Rory Bowens. If you want to read more about the upcoming referendum, you can do so on the Irish Independent website, and we'll have full rolling coverage as the ballots are counted on Saturday. And if you like the Indo Daily, don't forget to follow the podcast and leave us a review. We're offering Indo Daily listeners 50% off an Irish Independent digital subscription. Head over to independent.ie/redeem to sign up for unlimited access to premium content, e-paper, puzzles and more. Just enter the code INDO, that's I-N-D-O, to receive 50% off your subscription. Stay informed and engage. Subscribe today.